KCBX contributor Brian Reynolds speaks with author Dorothea Deli about her new book, Saying Goodbye to Your Dear Dog, 10 Questions to Help You Decide When to Euthanize.
Dorothea, could you tell us who you are and where you came from and how you got to this point of discussing this wonderful book?
Thank you, Brian. I got my first dog when I was 7 years old, and I got my first typewriter right around the same time. So dogs and writing are definitely my two most favorite things in the world. And I remember when I was about 30 or so, I lived in San Luis Obispo, and I actually started nesting. I crocheted a little baby blanket. I bought these cute little squeaky toys. I even went to the library and I checked out a couple books about how to potty train. It was time to adopt my very first dog as an adult. And so my husband and I went to Woods Humane Society, which is there in San Luis Obispo. And we ended up adopting this cattle dog. And the moment I saw her, when she looked into my eyes, I just knew that she was my soulmate. And I named her Collie, and she had the biggest personality of any dog I've ever met. And she was always up for adventure, which I really appreciated. And then, of course, as happens, time went on. And eventually, when Collie was about 15, she started having some kidney failure issues. She had some heart issues. And unfortunately, we had just moved. We had moved from Colorado to Nevada, so we didn't really have a vet here that we could work with. And I just picked the closest vet, you know, who had decent online reviews. Honestly, it was really, truly one of the most difficult things that my husband and I had ever been through together, because even though we had had pets as kids, we had never been the ones making the decisions about them. You know, Mike and I just felt like we didn't know who to turn to. We didn't know what to do. We were really confused. We felt scared. And I think because we don't talk about death and dying in our culture, we really felt alone. It's just not something people bring up usually. And so I did what I usually do when I'm struggling with something in life. I started writing, and I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And then after Collie had passed, I started interviewing other pet parents. And I just asked them, you know, about their experiences and what do they wish that they had known when they were facing end-of-life decisions for their dogs. And then I interviewed a couple veterinarians, and eventually we all kind of as a group came up with 10 questions that we agreed really would have helped us make this decision when we were facing it. And so I ended up putting in different people's stories, putting in these 10 questions, putting in a lot of research I had done. And it was lovely too. I was able to draw on some of my experiences working at Hospice of San Luis Obispo County. And the whole point was I just didn't want another pet parent to feel as scared or confused or as alone as I had felt. So that's how the book came to be.
Because we care about our dogs, care for our dogs as they care for us. Just, I'm looking at the title of the book here, and it makes me want to run the other direction, because it's a topic that looms over all of us who have pets, but it's just not something we want to approach. And I'm sure it's not just cultural, but it's the idea of losing someone you love, and maybe even being involved in making that happen. It's a very daunting thing. So first and foremost, I would salute your courage in doing this and kind of pushing back against our societal norms of not confronting certain truths of life, because life, I joke, this is really a bad one, but life is a fatal disease, mm-hmm. and we know what's the outcome of it's going to be at some point. We just don't know the circumstances. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I salute you for that. And I also, I guess I would note that if we're lucky as human beings, we might meet a soulmate in our 20s and stay with them the rest of our lives. But a pet, if you live an average age in this country, say 70, 80 years, you're going to be loving and losing 8 to 12 times in your lifetime, each one brutal. To me, that makes pet people special.
Yes, I love that you say that, Brian, because we go into that relationship knowing that we will more than likely outlive our pets. And yet we open our hearts to them and we love them and we're there for them at the very, very end. You know, I actually opened the book with a quote from Brené Brown. She says, "The bravest among us will always know heartbreak because those are the people who have the courage to love someone."
Yes, to love and lose. I would like to remind everybody that I'm Brian Reynolds for Issues and Ideas on KCBX Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today we are joined by author Dorothea Deli, who's written a book called Saying Goodbye to Your Dear Dog, 10 Questions to Help You Decide When to Euthanize. One of the things that struck me really to the quick was your experience of moving away from vets and other support people that you knew to basically to be strangers in a new land. But the difficulty of finding and getting involved with a vet that can be a good fit for you and your pet at that most important time. What, do you have any advice about that, about what to look for or things to maybe avoid?
I think it's really important that you feel rapport and trust with your vet. Now, some people I talked to felt that with the vet that they were working with, and so they didn't feel the need to, you know, get a second opinion or something like that. But for me, what I really noticed is the person listening to them, to me? Are they taking me seriously? Are they answering all of my questions? Those are kind of the what I've learned anyway to look for in a vet, someone that looks at my pet the same way I do, which is, you know, my family member.
Well, just to clarify that, because I think it's such an important point, you're not just looking in some cases for a second opinion, i.e. another vet to confirm what the other previous vet told you in terms of price and treatment and all the rest. But you're really saying that there might be some vets who are not a good fit. And as a pet owner on a mission, you need to, or the person needs to have the courage to look elsewhere. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I would agree. It's just like taking care of yourself. If you're working with a, you know, a medical doctor that for whatever reason you feel uncomfortable with, you know, you absolutely should look for someone else. You know, especially when we're talking about end-of-life care for our pets, we don't want... Well, what happened to me is afterward, I was filled with so much self-doubt. You know, did I do the right thing? Did I do it at the right time? Did I wait too long? Did I not wait long enough? And it was so confusing, and it was something that I think one of the reasons that we created the book is that it has a lot of worksheets in it. So you could sit down with your vet. You could bring these worksheets in and you could say, you know, here are the physical changes I'm noticing. Is it anything we should be worried about? Or here are the personality changes we've noticed. Or my dog started to withdraw. You know, whatever it is, it kind of gives you like a something concrete to bring in to your vet to discuss with them, just to make sure that we're all on the same page. Because although you and I both know a big part of your decision-making will be your intuition, there's also something really important to consider some of the kind of more objective changes that you notice in your pet. It's kind of like a combination, I think, between your head and your heart. And, you know, obviously most vets are going to be focused more on the head part of it, the intellectual part of it, which I absolutely think is wonderful. That's what we want them to do. And so, but yeah, at some point you also want to feel seen by them. They have a hard job. I mean, several vets I talk to, it's a difficult job.
Sure. I'm just going to mention when our second collie, when she died on the steps of the vet, I think of a broken heart because her other friend had gone just 2 or 3 months earlier from cancer. I was overwhelmed, and something happened in the vet's office. Anyway, we both started crying. and we hugged each other. Of course, this is pre-COVID. I'll never forget it, that he was affected and I was affected, and we both comforted each other, him as a professional and me as a pet owner. And it was, I'll never forget it. It was huge.
Yeah, that's so kind. It's just being there for each other in truly what's the hardest moment.
Maybe talk a little bit about some of your chapter headings. What are some of the broad categories in the book that you might describe for our listeners?
Well, I broke the book into three parts. So the first part is to ask your vet. And so we've got a couple of worksheets in there to take in to your next vet appointment and questions you can ask, but there's also space in there to write in some questions you might have. The second section of the book is ask your dear dog. Since our pets can't talk to us, we're paying attention to their behavior. This whole concept of quality of life is pretty confusing, and so I tried to break it down into specific areas for pet parents to pay attention to. And, of course, a big one for a lot of people is, has my pet given me a sign? And then the third section is ask yourself. The final question really is, you know, what does my heart tell me to do? And I also have a section, once you've made your decision, and either way, you know, whether you've decided it's time or it's not time, the goal would be to just help you know, is it time or is it not time? Is it closer to time? Is it, you know, just kind of gauging that. But once you do decide, then I've got a whole section that helps you put together an end-of-life plan for your pet. And I found this so helpful with my second dog, Jenna, because now I kind of knew. I knew where she would be when we euthanized, or she would be at home. I knew who would be doing the euthanizing. I knew what method that vet was using. I knew what we would be doing with her afterwards. So all these questions that you're right, you don't want to think about them, especially when you're distraught. But if we are able to think about them and get them written down, especially if we do that in advance, then when the time comes, it's just one less thing to worry about. In fact, I think it's one of the most loving things we can do for ourselves, is to prepare for that. And then I also have a section for people who have children. I know talking to kids about this is also challenging. So there's a section in there about talking to your kids, depending on how old they are. And then just some ideas for ways they can be involved, maybe in a memorial service, something like that. That's the general layout of the book.
One of the things that really struck me, and we haven't mentioned it yet, but there's the normal or typical scenario of an older pet needing, you know, the owner and the dog to think about, you know, end of life things. But this can happen in their youth. They could get hit by a car. Mm-hmm. They could develop a tumor. And I think some of your stories in your book talk about that. It's happening, but it's not happening on the schedule you think it should.
Exactly. I did talk to a few folks who their pets were young. And like you said, the dog developed a cancerous tumor and it was inoperable. And he was just a few years old. And so that's the other thing I think about, is it's not just for sick or aging pets.
If you would be so kind, Dorothea, could you read two or three of the selections from your pet parents?
Thank you. I'd love to do that. This first story comes from question 5, which is my dear dog withdrawing socially? And this is the story of Bailey. John Thompson's Labrador-Weimaraner mix, Bailey, loved to play catch. You couldn't throw a tennis ball enough times or far enough for her, he says. She was a joyful soul with a ball in her mouth. Bailey was loyal, too. She was always by my side, John says, often with her head in my lap. As Bailey aged, she slowed down. At first, John noticed little changes, like her not being able to hop out of the car or not wanting to chase the ball as often. When you start seeing those behavioral changes, John says, they're coming on so slowly, you don't really realize that your pet is in a lot of pain. It wasn't until Bailey stopped hanging out with the family and spent most of her time lying in the back hallway that John understood just how much pain she was in. She just wasn't herself, he says. No interest in companionship. After several false starts, John finally made the euthanasia call to the vet. When the vet came to their house, John took her to the back hallway and sat on the floor next to Bailey. He gently laid her head in his lap and petted her as the doctor gave her the injections. Bailey relaxed for the first time in a year and a half, John says. It hadn't been so obvious to me how much pain she'd been in, how much she was holding it in her body, until there was just this relaxation, that letting go. It hurt to lose his constant companion of 15 years. It was also a relief, because now Bailey was at peace and not in pain anymore. I think Bailey was ready to go, John says, and it took me a long time to get there. The attachment was completely mine. I put Bailey through a year of unneeded pain, and I regret that. I miss her head, he says, in my lap, and just rubbing her ears. Bailey had the softest ears. I miss those general moments of camaraderie and love.
Wow. That's very, very moving. I think we have time for one more.
I will read you then one from me and my dog, Collie. Has my dear dog given me a sign? I wanted a sign from Collie that euthanizing her was the right thing to do. A sign so obvious that I'd immediately feel at peace because I'd know beyond a doubt, with 100% certainty, that it was time. But it didn't work that way. Instead, Collie and I shared a quiet moment that I chose to interpret as a sign. No fireworks, no magic, just the juxtaposition of the following two moments with my kid, Collie. One night when Collie was about a year old, she cut her paw while digging in our backyard. She hobbled into the house and found me at my desk. She held up her paw to show me her bloody wound, and her eyes seemed to say, "Look, Mom, I'm hurt. Please make it better." In that moment, I felt like I truly became a dog mom. This was my first baby's first boo-boo, and she trusted me to help her. I yelled for Mike and then ran to the bathroom for supplies. By the time Mike found us, I had taped two maxi pads to Collie's leg. We rushed out to the car and arrived at the emergency vet hospital 20 minutes later. They seemed to sense we were new dog parents and were very sweet to us. After a quick exam, the vet assured us that Collie's wound was superficial and it would heal just fine with a couple of stitches. I had saved my dog with feminine hygiene products. Now, fast forward 15 years. I was lying on the couch reading when I felt someone staring at me. I glanced up and I saw Collie, who had been sleeping a moment before, looking right at me. The look in her eyes made me catch my breath. In a flash, that memory of her first boo-boo as a baby came back to me. And just like all those years ago, her eyes seemed to say, "Look, Mom, I'm hurt." Collie was tired. She was in pain. "Please make it better." Only now there was only one way to make it better. Only one way to end her suffering. And that was to end my baby Bubs's life. In that moment, I became a dog mom in a deeper way than I ever imagined possible. Because I loved Collie, I would let her go.
We have to end it here. I'm sorry we could go on and on, but I'd like to remind everyone that I am Brian Reynolds for Issues and Ideas on KCBX, Public Radio for the Central Coast. Today, we were joined by author and pet owner Dorothea Deli, whose book, Saying Goodbye to Your Dear Dog, 10 Questions to Help You Decide When to Euthanize, is available online. And Dorothea, could you tell us your website?
That is goodbyedeardog.com. And we have a couple of the guide sheets up there. We've got some video interviews with different pet parents and other support materials.
Great. Thank you so much. And thanks for being here today.
Okay. Thank you, Brian.